legends, my name is Mo, and welcome to the Can't Can World podcast. I am a Royal Marine who is dedicated to optimizing human performance and want to bring you exposure to the fantastic people supporting the same name. Having struggled to adjust when leaving the Marines, my next guest has worked his way up from rock bottom to help others achieve their goals. The man coach has a wealth of knowledge as he talks about his own struggles and building his business as he aims to be better tomorrow than today. Episode 26, James Boardman. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast channel for updates on new releases. And why not leave a review on your podcast provider? And follow us on Instagram on @MoMorrisRMPage to show your support.
I'm loving the vest in the background.
Oh yeah, mate. I converted the garage last year into an office and a utility. So I've just got like literally a little bit of space. You'll also be pleased to see there's like boxes of tatami kit there as well.
Not that.
For the lads. So
I've seen you smashing the competitions.
Mate, the competitions are smashing me, mate. I kind of started a little bit later, didn't I? So 40 now. So just doing them is a good thing. So
I loved you. I literally squared right away. Thing I found to being in the core, like being around the lads in there, just that banter. It's the same. It's exactly the same. It's mental.
Yeah, it's wicked, isn't it? What how have you been anyway, mate?
All right. Yeah, it's been 10. It's been 10 and a half years since I've left, and it only feels like a couple of years ago. It's been a mental ride. First 3 years, mate, I fucking crashed and burned big time.
Why? Like, why did you leave in the first place?
The reason I left was because I was fucking sick of being a weekend like dad. Like, you know, I really wanted to be with my kids. I needed to kind of make a life change. You fucking know what I was like back in the day in that fucking staff room with my brother. I always tell everyone the story about my brother. Everyone fucking rinsed.
I was speaking to Banksy literally the other day about it, and because he's back on the staff at the minute. Brilliant. And I was saying I was going to be chatting with you, and we had a little giggle about exactly that thing as well.
Yeah.
What? You ain't even got a brother.
Yeah, you got a brother. What? What?
It's an in-house joke for anyone that listens.
Yeah, I know, mate. Honestly,
that will stay that way.
When I left, it didn't work out. The missus, you know, I think I didn't realize at the time, but for the first 6 months when I left, I was going through huge trauma, huge shift. And it was an identity thing, right? So I was like, I want to be around the kids. I want to watch them grow up. I want to make a go of like my marriage. I need to change my ways. So, you know, being a dad was the primary decision. And the first 6 months, mate, I was like rag order. I didn't know what was going on. Imagine getting punched in the face, boxing, you know, your head's like rattling. It was like that, 24/7, like 365.
Why though? Because I've not done that yet.
Yeah.
So, and I'm genuinely interested, but why, if you chose to do that, did you expect that you're going to have that identity crisis? Was it something that was a bit of a sucker punch that no one told you about?
I thought it was just going to roll into Civvy Street. Like, I was like, fucking, what's the problem? Do you know what I mean? What's the fucking problem? I've got this job. And I left the military on the Friday, and then on the Monday I started teaching 16 to 19 year olds. So like what happened is that,
mate, sorry, mate, there's like, I can hear this tone. I don't know if you can hear it.
No.
It's like a,
oh, can hear it now.
You hear that?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
It's your dial up, that is. is that your life support machine? Yeah, mate,
it's fucking keeping me going in the background here. I've been sanctioned to this room. This is it.
Mate, is that gone?
It's kind of like,
yeah, that's workable.
Yeah.
Go on, mate. Yeah, so you're teaching 16 to 9. I'm not editing this either because it's your admin.
Yeah, it's fine, mate.
I want everyone
to... so 16 to 9 year olds and going in there. So like the whole time I'm like still Royal Marine, James Bourne, Sergeant Royal Marine, still identity. I'm still trying to live that life. I'm still trying to live a military life in an environment where it doesn't belong. And I'm not dealing with it, and I'm not processing that change of identity. You know, the people in the office are like all jacked, all over, just into themselves. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'm looking around thinking, I've just got no purpose here. Like, is this my life? Like, there's no purpose, there's no drive. And I literally just felt hollow, mate, like almost immediately. And what's funny is that in October, so I left in September 23rd. In October, at the end, I went back to the careers office, having spoken to a chief there saying, I want back in. And I think it was, I think Paul Farr was the WO1 at the time. And I was in contact with him saying, I want to come back. I'm coming back. So I went to go and get signed to have my papers released, my medical papers. And he said, we'll be in touch with you in about a week, and then we get you in for an interview and you'll be back in by Christmas. And I was like, brilliant, let's fucking go. And I never heard anything. So 1 week passed. I thought, I'll give it another week, but went past, and I was like, I still haven't heard anything. So I phoned them up and they told me that the chief had left. And I said, oh, well, this was my situation. He goes, oh, he hasn't passed any of that on. So he's obviously just like mugged it off, like, or just forgotten about it, and he's transferred out there. And he says, do you want me to take that process? And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. So I've never heard anything again for like another 2 weeks. I phoned up, he wasn't in, he was out of office. And the more and more that I was going through that, I was just taking it as, I was getting more and more used to civilian life, but I just took it as a hint that that wasn't the right thing to do. That was an immediate reaction to go straight back in, which would have like not solved any problems whatsoever for me. So I ended up...
Because that wouldn't have solved the weekend dad thing.
No. Like, do you know what I mean? So seeing your kids crying when you're leaving because they don't want you to go, it's just like, you know, my dad died when I was six. And I was like, so I know what it's like to grow up without a dad. And sure, I'm present for that weekend and I've got leave. But what about when I go on my next tour and the 10 months building up to going away from it? It's like, it's getting harder and harder and harder. And I just didn't want it. So I got over that immediate reaction to it. And fast forward 18 months, I was divorced. I very nearly came close to killing myself, like in our old house. I just got to that point where I was numb, like just numb. I didn't feel anything. And I was so mentally like in on myself that I didn't know what I was doing or thinking. You know, I'd set up all of these like super strong painkillers. I was going to take multiple of these tablets and with Jack Daniels and whiskey and just hope to go to sleep and not wake up. And I got into that mindset and I was just like, bro, what are you doing? Like, and it, you know, and I,
why was that though? So sorry, mate. Right. Why was that? Because you said you were getting more used to civilian life, but was there still a lack of identity? Was it something before? Like what?
It just continued. So I was wearing a really good mask. No, you would never, from the outside in, you would never have guessed that I was going through all of that, right? So just had to...
Your mask at the minute is not very good either, mate. You need to change it up.
Fucking hell. Come on the podcast. That'll be nice.
sorry.
yeah, and you know... I just missed the camaraderie from the lads. When you're PTI, we have all of that banter and interaction. There's lads there that are your family. You've got this huge family and you take the piss out of each and you do all of that, but you know you've got each other's back all the way at the end of the day. And you wake up and you're dealing with the nods, even, you know, training them and building them up gives you a sense of purpose. You're part of something. You wear the cap badge, you wear the green lid, you wear the flashes, and you feel fucking great. And through that process of coming out right up to that point where I sat on my bed and I'd lost all of that. I'd forgotten everything that I'd become, everything that I'd done. I was completely numb. I didn't know what I was trying to achieve. You know, I fucked up my marriage. I got divorced. I was drinking heavily. And I was like, I don't know how to get out of this. I just want to tap out. It's like getting choked out in jiu-jitsu, right? You're fucking slowly going to sleep. And, I just had to
smile. And did you never think I'd like to reach out to anybody?
And that's what Rob Driscoll, do you remember Rob Driscoll?
He spoke
to me, he went, why didn't you reach out? And I went, I literally don't know. I was just, I think there was an element of being embarrassed, being an element of being ashamed, or an element with, does anyone give a fuck? But when you're not thinking clearly, all of those things are 10x, right? They're 10 times what you think they actually are. And if I just reached out to you or someone else or someone else, and I just said, this is what I'm going through. Do you know anyone else that's gone through this?
Well, you'll be surprised who would go, mate, I'm there. It's a really strange dynamic,
it's huge,
isn't it?
And mental health has come on so much in the last 10 years, right? In terms of the awareness of it. I see a lot of the veteran videos going out and I'm like, wow, it's really out there. And, but on that night, I kind of looked at the pictures of my kids that were sitting on there, and I got out of the house and I just got out of the house for 3 hours, just walked, run. And, you know, I was crying my eyes out, you know. It was tough, 3 hours. But I came back and I was it was the first time in a long time I felt really clear-minded. You know, I come back and I was like, fucking, you're a bag of shit. Like, you know, remember your values, remember where you've come from. Like, let's fucking square this away. And I guess that was my turning point, right? I'm not saying it was perfect after that, but that was where
It's not going to get any worse.
And I kind of used a little bit of the strength mentally that I went through all of my years in the military to go, right, get back to your roots, but you're not a Royal Marine anymore. You have to start figuring out who James Baldwin's going to be now. And that's why I went into entrepreneurship. Like, I quit my fucking job. I was like, this is not fulfilling. I need something to challenge me. So I started my first boot camp and I fucking went all in. Like, you know, I was nearly about to lose the house because we were financially broke and smashed as well. Got that first repossession notice coming in saying, unless you stop paying us, we're going to have to take over the house. And I was like, fuck me.
So is this after the Jack Daniels night?
Yeah, so after that, you know, the money issues were like, I took about 16 grand pay cut a year. And I was working a side hustle, which was just doing a bit of PT and boot camps on Wednesday and Saturday to earn a little bit of extra cash to try and make up for the salary, you know. And when you live in Maricourt, it's not as dear, right? It's not as expensive, it's like fucking dreams, pop star wages. And so I went into entrepreneurship. I built up my first business and we went from £6,000 a year to like 110 by myself, just by purely watching YouTube videos, learning how to run a business, showing up, being a PTI to civvies, and they fucking loved it. And we had something like 400 members in the first year. And suddenly I started having all of that purpose again. I had something to work towards. I've seen people really transform their lives. You know, people are fucking sending me emails going, you don't know what you're doing for me. Like, and all of those things started to create a form of identity or purpose, you know. And I slowly started looking behind me like a ship moving away from land at the core and what my life was going through in those last 3 years. And I was moving further and further away from it. Do you know what I mean?
So, I mean, you flippantly just said, I went from like £6,000 a year to £110,000 a year. But what was that year like? Because people will sit there and go, oh, wicked, magic. I can do that. Anyone has got the potential to do that. But how hard... What was it like to build that up? The hours you were working, like the, you know, can you explain that? Because
course.
I think that's the bit that's often missed.
Yeah, of course.
When or you see the end result, the start and finish, but the middle bit's important.
Yeah, I agree. So it was super hard work. You know, I think with our backgrounds, we're not afraid of hard work, right? We graft. When we work, we work. When we play. And I didn't even know what a fucking P&L sheet was, mate. So like a profit and loss sheet, like what's that? So I literally would spend, and the way that I structured my day was that I would spend 3 hours a day on personal development of how to run a business, how to market, how to sell, how to bring people into your world. And I had to balance around my kids. So I saw my kids half the week, right? So the days that I had my kids, I protected that time. The times I didn't have my kids, I'd wake up at 6 and I'd finish work at midnight, like literally. And I'd do PTs all in the morning. I'd do my personal development, grab lunch, PTs all the way through the day, all the way through the night, do a bootcamp class, do another PT. It was just graft. And I was like really cheap as well. Like, you know, I had to be, I just had to get people in front of me. And I would say in that first year, I'd probably sacrifice some quality time with my kids because of just the pure worry of financial issues. You know, I shit you not. Like when the kids weren't around, we couldn't afford to put the heating on. We was eating like Tesco baked beans and bread and stuff like that. And I remember 6 months in, for the first time, I treated me and the kids to go for a meal, and it just felt really good. Do you know what I mean? We went out and we fucking bought everything. It was about 35 quid, and I probably could have afforded it much more before that, but I just went out and that was just a real like moment of like, you've earned that. Like, do you know what I mean? You've grafted for that. But mentally, emotionally, I was fucking grafting and fucked as well. Like, do you know what I mean? It was just pure. It's like being in a field, like for a year, you know, with a computer trying to figure out like what's next, how do I grow? And I didn't necessarily hit a brick wall in that first year, but it was when we got the business to a great place to then being able to structure that business, to be able to stop that amount of work. So it's like a train going full speed ahead. How do you stop that train? And the following year was a big battle, nowhere near what I went through when I left the core, but it was a big battle in trying to stop myself going full on all of the time, because I didn't need to do that anymore. I got myself up here. Then it was a case of balancing my lifestyle between kids, me, and actually having a life. Do you know what I mean?
So it's a switch in focus to developing into maintenance, yeah. Almost.
Yeah, 100%. Into a livable lifestyle that where you can run a business, but you can have a life and you can be a dad at the same time. And it's
I have a question on that, yeah. Mate. For a bloke that has been in the Marines, that has been driven, that has wanted purpose, identity, that has always grafted to get something that has not been attainable to you right there and then. So commando training, PT course, senior command, like your sergeant's course, you go out, you build your business, you're always building. That must have been quite tricky psychologically to go, now I'm just going to crank the handle.
Yeah.
Because I'm not building anymore. I'm now just going to turn the handle. How do you deal with that? How did you overcome that? Have you overcome that?
So the real answer is no. Nothing is ever good enough. I ironically did a video of this. I did a reel on it on Instagram yesterday. It was called Chasing, let me just tell you what it was called, because there are any of you asking that question. It was called Chasing an Impossible Outcome. And it's always like dangling the carrot scenario, right? Because I'm just driven and ambitious. And I think I've always been like that. And I think the Marines taught me to have that fire and that work ethos to go out and get it. I think the levels of, instead of, you can't just switch that off. For me, what I feel that I have to do is turn the volume down. So it's understanding that it's not forever. It's just that through this period of time, so these first 6 months for me, we're completely shifting the way we run our business. So there's a big evolution going on. So it needs a lot of graft. But what I foresee is that when I come back from my holiday in August, I'm just going to turn the volume down. And all we're going to do is we're going to go at a little bit lighter pace, because I know that if I don't, I'm going to crash and burn. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter who you are on this planet. If you're going 110%, 24/7, 365, you will crash and burn, you know, and you know that as well as anyone, as you just can't do it. So I think turning the volume down rather than switching it off is probably the answer.
And then what happened then, mate? So you've gone in that business, you built up your PT business. Yeah. What was that phase like? And then what happened after that?
So that phase was brilliant. You know, coming back after being away, living away for so long, being in the Marines, I didn't really know many people. So I didn't really, you know, and then when we broke up, you're then dealing with all the dramas of the breakup and everyone thinking you're a dick. And then not being wrong, but it's a case of building up a new life, right? So you have to build up a new life. You have to identify yourself in a new way. And it was a fresh start. It was meeting new people. I met my wife to be, like, we're getting married in 5 weeks. Like, you know, she started coming to there. I met some of my best friends that I have today through there. It was just a really great period of time going through it. And then we had my third kid, Albert, in 2017 with Jem. And when Alba came along, it highlighted to me that something had to change for two reasons. Number one, I didn't want to be a fucking 50-year-old personal trainer in the middle of a field when it's raining down. That's not the life that I want to live. And number two, I don't want to be missing out on her growing up when I have to be out the door at 6 a.m. to take morning classes. I have to go and take circuits. I have to do PTs. I have to fucking work in the evening. It's like a split shift scenario. And I'm like, I was slowly done with that. And I was slowly falling out of love. And what I really wanted to do was help other blokes who went through stuff like what I went through, not necessarily military blokes, but just men in general who were lost, feeling hollow, just drifting through life, who really needed an input of fire to stop them losing their marriage, to stop them drinking, to stop them having suicidal thoughts, to make an impact on their lives. And, you know, I was thinking about it over and over and over again. And my mentor at the time said, enough fucking thinking. Let's just do this. Just fucking do it. So I did it. And what slowly happened is that my boot camp was doing really well here. This was a side hustle. And because the passion was so much, that slowly drifted, sold that. And then I just went all in on it was the dad coach. And then we shifted it to the man coach because I think people thought I was teaching people how to be a dad.
Yeah, and I saw that. What was the decision to solely focus on men and not women as well?
It's a good question. I think part and parcel of the way that I communicate. So I've worked with men most of my life, like, you know, being in the Marines, I kind of like, you know, the chat is I'm very familiar with that chat and I can connect more with it. So I think at the time, I just wanted to help people that like were going through that. What I've really realized though, through the journey over the last 3 years is that women are struggling just as much as men, like hugely, massively. And I think it's something that I need to address next year in terms of it can't be just like, you know, I enjoy working with just guys, but do we bring women into this? I don't like, that's not a decision I've come to, but I need to do something for women because a lot of women do follow me and a lot of women do take a lot of value from what I offer and a lot of comfort in terms of the stuff for mental health, lifestyle. But not only that, understanding their husbands better. Like I get a lot of emails saying like, thank you for saving my husband or thank you for giving my husband back or this or that. And now I understand what he's going through a little bit better. So there's that element as well, whether you call it the wives club or whatever it might be. But at the time it was just very narrow focused in terms of, I want to help men that were like me. And it went for, first of all, it was dads. Now it's all men, businessmen. You know, we got guys who are CEOs of huge companies to dads who just look after the kids at home. And that's their, you know, vast backgrounds and environments that they're in, but with the same problem. And it doesn't matter about the demographics. The same issues are still cropping up over and over again.
I think the point about like diversifying is obviously completely yours to make in whatever your business model looks like. People are people, right? Yeah. And so if people are feeling shit about themselves, the context as to why they're feeling shit, it will be different, but the concepts are still very much the same. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see where you go, because I was interested as like to the name, and I remember you had the dad coach and it changed to the man coach and stuff like that, and it's really slick branding. I enjoy some of your ramblings at 5 o'clock in the morning. Although I will say that I don't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to listen to them. I get the recordings, mate. I'm not going to lie. I'm a half five riser.
Good stuff.
So with the man coach then, what are the sort of, like, I say common themes, but what are the themes that you generally see and generally experience, comments that will be presented to you as trends, as it were? Because obviously I know they'll be individual circumstance, but like the commonality between it.
Yeah. I think the biggest one is the lack of knowing where they're going with their lives when they get to a certain point. Now that age could vary. Okay. So what we tend to find is a lot of people lacking direction once they've got to a certain point. So when they get to a point where they've got the kids and they're in a job and they're married and they got the house, they're like, now fucking what? Like, what am I supposed to do now with the rest of my life? And then it becomes Groundhog Day. It's like running on the hamster wheel, right? Like, what am I doing for me? Where's the passion? Where's the fire? And I think that's when the chaos, the cycle of chaos kind of reigns in of everyday life. So like work stress, external stress with the government, wars, like everything going on. And the lack of control in terms of emotionally and mentally and physically that the guys have is a real shortcoming in terms of being able to show up each day, like to be the husband that they need to be the father that they need to be the business owner or the peer or the friend or the son, because they're just in this zombie land. They just disappeared. They're like fucking, it's like walking along going now, fucking what, where am I going? And that comes from a lack of structure, lack of routine, lack of awareness, like that, you know, I think the front door to all of this is that awareness pill, which is why I wrote my first book. It was really to give guys an eye-opener in terms of to the awareness of what's going on. Like, it's like bitch slapping someone around the face and going, dude, what, like, what the fuck are you doing here, right? And I think that problem keeps coming up over and over and over again, being stuck in that numb mentality, that hollow mentality, and really not having a lot of confidence and self-esteem or belief as a byproduct to that. And then, like I say, the results, it affects the marriage, it affects the drinking, it affects the health, some serious cases, suicide. So we're just trying to make as big of impact as possible to try and teach these guys how to structure themselves, how to organize themselves. It's almost teaching lads how to relive their lives again. It's like teaching them how to restart. It's like a midpoint. So if you think about our educational journey, we go from like 4 to 18, the majority of us, some go on to uni, then we go into the big wide world. And the only learning that a lot of people do is like, is the life that they experience. And from the failures, they learn from that experience, but we don't actually go out and go, right, how do I plan my day? How do I conduct a morning routine? How do I make sure I'm consistent with my health? How do I talk to somebody if my mindset is frail? You know, how do I build a business? How do I make an impact on my marriage? Like, and how do I communicate with my wife? You know, how do I evolve? How do I deal with all of these emotions of depression and anxiety? And how do I gain control? And you think, and I think within our package, within our world, within the communication between me, social media and the outdoor world, it's about trying to actually say to guys, you don't have to be perfect. Like, no one has all of the answers, but have a little bit of confidence in yourself. Do something for yourself. Let's find a little bit of fire. Let's not just accept that where you are is the only way it's ever going to be. And it's just that nudge. It's that little poke. Say, hey, come on. There's more to life than the way you are right now.
Yeah, and I suppose often it's about sometimes just having a different perspective, where if you're constantly seeing the same things or looking in the same places, you're always going to see the same things. But you have someone come in and just say, look, well, have you looked there? Yeah. And they say, no, I haven't even thought to look there. And I love the saying, you don't know what you don't know. Yeah. And that being provided that sort of information can just, like you say, provide enough of a spark for someone to go, I've got that now. It makes complete sense. I'll see you later. 100%.
Do you know the analogy I always use? Because you're into jiu-jitsu as well. So whenever I roll with any of the white belts, whenever I'm going guard on my back, all they ever try, the way that they pass me is by trying to bulldoze through my legs. Like, they'll just come straight on. And I go, you know, if you keep pushing forward there, you're eventually going to be fucking exhausted. You're going to be flat on your face. You're not getting past those legs. And then suddenly you say, right, go around the side, push the legs down, go around the side. And you're like, oh my God, why didn't I think of that before? And then like, and that is simply the simple analogy of what I'm trying to do with guys. Go, stop trying to go through this brick wall. Just fucking walk around it and continue. And that's it. And suddenly you're like, fuck, yes, mate. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, force on force is something that we kind of get attracted to energy, whether it's good or bad. And so whether, you know, even if it's bad energy, we sort of butt up against it rather than maybe just let it be and just slightly go off in a different direction. Same, you can apply the same to rugby. You want to play rugby, run into a player or tackle you. If you run slightly at diagonal, you might break through. Yeah. You know, it's like you're trying to create the angles and an opportunity to be able to to be able to advance, right?
100%.
No, it's a really good concept.
Yeah.
Well, so with the how do you deliver this education then? What is it? I know that you do a lot on social media. You do a lot of marketing, which is by no mean feat either. There's a lot of hours that goes into, and hours and mistakes, etc., going into stuff like that to get it where you need it to be. But how do you deliver those education packages?
So the way that what you see on social media is almost a snippet. It's almost, I think what I kind of do is open up my door and go, this is me. Like, this is what I do. Like, this is my personality. You know, I don't believe that my mentor and coach is always like, you could just polish this up a little bit. And I'm just like, that's not me. Like, I like to educate people by being a bit ranty or being me. But the way the real work that we do is within our brotherhood, and we call it the Brotherhood Arena. So what we have is a community of men. And the way that we introduce people into that is through our 90-day elite movement. Okay. And over the 12 weeks, we have 12, we call it 12 missions. So each week there's a different mission. So like, for example, the first 4 weeks, week one would be how to construct your perfect morning routine. Okay. So we teach like having a mission statement, pillars to follow, preparing yourself and getting your timings right. All right. All things that conduct a great morning routine, because if you get your morning routine right, weighed off, this is going to be in the right frame of mind. The second week is about vision and time management. So how to manage some of your time, how to think about vision. The third one is very much about structure. Okay. Planning the next 28 days, 90 days. And then like the fourth week is reflection and review. And then we go on, there's like different missions. So it's all in this hub. And what we do is the guys go through it week by week. And then we have an accountability system. So the accountability for me is key, because what it does, it makes sure guys do what they said they were going to do. All right. It's case touch and base, being part of that community, not being the guy to fall behind and just touching all the dots. It's like a streak system. I don't know if you do it, but I do Duolingo and I'm learning Spanish at the minute. So I'm like on a 45-day streak. So what I don't want to do is go back to fucking zero. Like, so I make sure I make time to do my Duolingo. So pretty much every time I have a shit, I do my Duolingo. But my brain knows it's that routine and I don't go back to circle. So like with the guys, what I say is set your alarm for 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, what I want you to do is then do your accountability. That's when you're going to come in and you're going to start writing that down. Do you know what I mean? My fucking daughter's trying to call me 2 seconds. And when you constantly go through that, your brain, what your brain does is connects to a process of connecting action and recognizing that you've taken that action. So if I put the course there with no accountability, no program, if 100 people bought the program, I reckon 10 would follow through that program the whole way. I reckon if 100 people bought it with community, accountability and support, probably 90 people would do it. And that's the difference. People need that guidance, support, direction to be able to implement things they haven't fucking implemented for years. So if you've been in a shit routine for like 20 years, one 90-day course is not going to change you overnight, which is why I just need to keep prodding you every day. And our saying is show up 1% a day, every day forever. Like if you do that, just show up, minimum requirement. And it's like going to the gym. You start off with 6 kilogram dumbbells, right? Bicepting. And by the end of 90 days, you're on 20s. And that's the way that we build up the mind and build up the conditioning and build up the awareness of these lads over the time.
A lot of people won't even know that they need to, they're in a shit routine.
No.
They've got no idea at all.
100%, mate. Like, it's honestly, until I start talking about stuff that I do on social media, people go, oh, actually, you're right. I don't, like, I get up at 8 o'clock. I've got to be at work at 8:30.
It's almost like, you know, like the way a comedian will take the piss out of life, yeah, life stuff that people do, and everyone laughs because they go, oh, yeah, no, I do that.
I know, 100%.
It's very much like the work that you do. You are highlighting, not in a comedian, like in a funny way, but you're highlighting stuff that people go, yeah, actually, now you said that. Yeah, I get that, 100%. Which is why it's so relatable.
Yeah, and I, do you know what? I think a lot of that comes down to a lot of the work we did, or a lot of the work that we do with the recruits going through Royal Marines, right? It's their evolution over, is it still 32 weeks? Over that 32 weeks, is everything, their learning curve is through the roof. Like learning. Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? And that's why their accountability, remember the kit musters out in the field, like you don't want to be in a fucking shit. You know, you don't want to be crawling around. So every time you're learning. And I think unconsciously, a lot of the stuff that we did in the military, I actually implement in a lot of the structure that we do here, right? I'm not trying to create Royal Marines or that military approach. I'm just trying to create guys that have more control over their lives.
Boundaries, content, focus, direction. Yeah. And then they fill it in with what's appropriate to them, 100%,
right? 100%, mate. And it doesn't matter how much we try, not everyone will follow. Like, do you know what I mean? You can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. And I've learned that lesson the hard way, because I put a lot into the guys, put a lot of energy. I'm very passionate about how guys change, because I don't ever want to see a guy lose his wife or his family because he wasn't showing up and he wasn't being a guy that they need him to be. Or I don't want a guy to go down becoming an alcoholic because he can't cope any other way than drinking. But like literally, unless they're willing to meet you halfway, it emotionally drains you. It drains, like, if I can't suddenly go, right, I've got 200 blokes I'm looking after, I can't ignore 199 of them because this one guy won't show up. You know, part of the acceptance for me as being a coach is that not everybody is going to get the result that you want them to get.
And not everyone's coachable either. 100%. Not everyone's coachable. And I think that was something I learned quite quickly years ago, that when you're trying to help people, but they don't want to be helped. Yeah. The difference between can't be helped or don't want to be, but they actually choose no. Yeah. Then your emotional bank account can't afford to spend money on that person, like emotion on it, because it will drain you.
Yeah, and it would take you away. Not only that, it would take you away from all of the people that matter and all of the things that matter. Like I've fallen in that trap. I haven't done for a very long time, but I remember the last occasion it happened. I went, right, never again. Like, do you know what I mean? It's fucking digging out blind. I'm like, you know, not getting any, sacrificing my time with the kids, some time with other clients, and, you know, my own personal energy. It's like, can't do it.
So how do you fit time in for your own personal development then?
So I'm pretty rigid. So I've got my journals, my diaries, and what I do, I start this probably this afternoon, actually. So what I've got to do next week, then tomorrow I structure like a timetable. So if you think about, in fact, the recruits do it as well, don't they? But I always think about the college timetable. When you're given your college timetable, you kind of like know where you got to be at what time and what it is that you're going to be doing. And then you can kind of base yourself around that. So you know when you can meet with your friends or go to the gym or go and do some part-time work and earn some money. So that's what I do. We work off four pillars: health, relationships, personal development, and business or career. And we kind of, when I put my diary or put my structure, my weekly focus, I always put health in first. So my morning routines, my gym sessions or my jiu-jitsu sessions or going to play golf, whatever it's going to be, I put that in the diary first. Because if I don't do the things that I need to do for me first, then everyone else doesn't get the best version. Then it's family time. So like, what are my cutoffs this week? All right. So what I try and do is make sure I do the school run every single day. That's my task. That's my goal. Start work around 9, and then I kind of prioritize what that work is. So we call them kill zones. So an hour and a half priority work, phones off, and I focus on whatever it is that I need to do. Just one thing. And I try and get 2 kill zones in a day. And they are 2 things that attach to the growth of the business. And then after lunch, from about 12:30 to 2:30, it's the logistical side. So catching up with the team, getting back to messages, planning the next day. So that's kind of like how I run that. And then I kind of slot in my personal development in and around that as well. So it's pretty well structured. Like anyone else, there's days when I run over, like, you know, the system fails, but you just got to wake up the next day and go, right, let's go again. Like,
well, it's Pareto's law, isn't it? It's 80-20 rule. You try and do it 80% of the time. You've got to give yourself that slack, because if you don't give yourself that slack, you fail on a daily basis. So, you know, and if you fail, you go back to that 0 that you spoke about.
100%.
You're like, so you've got to give yourself a little bit of leeway, a little bit of wriggle room to to go, it's okay, I was a little bit over, under, whatever it might be, but I'm still on track.
Yeah, man, 100%. And be okay with it. Like, don't take it personally. Just not, like, you know, a lot of bad lads beat themselves up because they haven't met their expectations or they haven't done what they said they were going to do. And it's like, fucking chill. You've got the rest of your life. It's just one blip.
So, mate, it's... I'm interested to talk about the social media side of things as well, because you, like you say, you are, your Insta page certainly is very you.
Yeah.
It's unapologetically you as well. It's sometimes not necessarily PC because you're being honest about how you think and feel about things, which is great. So how do you, that not everyone's going to like it either. And I do see some posts on there that you put about some of the haters as well.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Does it ever get to you enough to doubt yourself? And how do you deal with that?
That's a good question. When I first started, like when I kind of just went from a very small business to something that was actually a movement that was starting to move forwards. Like I would call it the green mode, and I would just be like, right, I'm gonna fucking hunt this motherfucker down. And I'm gonna, but that was in the early days. You know, I probably can admit that I was probably quite emotionally, quite low in emotional intelligence in terms of being able to deal with and handle that. I used to take it quite personally, you know. If you ask me today, I just couldn't give a fuck. I just don't have the time or the energy to deal with it, like to deal with those comments. Like, they don't affect me personally. Once they've made their comment, I reckon within an hour they won't even remember that they've made it. So I don't take it personally. My mental resilience to it and my emotional levels of conditioning are pretty good. Every now and then one or two would get in and I'd be thinking, I'll be doubting myself, but I haven't, that hasn't happened for quite a long time, but it did used to affect the levels of my own self-belief about what I was achieving, like hugely, like to the point where I wasn't being myself on Instagram or Facebook or on any of my lives. I was almost dictating the script based around what they said. So I was like,
what they might think,
yeah,
as well.
So I was trying to please the troll almost, or that piece of shit that made that comment. And then I was like, fuck this. And I just, as I've got busier and busier and busier, I was just thinking to myself, I just don't have fucking time, mate. Like, I'm just, yeah, cheers. Thanks for coming. Hope you feel better soon, mate. Like that. And that's literally all right. Non-emotional. I won't ever think about it again. I'm sure he probably won't even think about it again. And the thing that acceptance about any situation, I think is a real, if you can condition yourself to accept things, I think it really helps you with your emotional and mental health. Because if I can accept there's always going to be someone out there who doesn't like us. There's always going to be someone who disagrees. But if you get into it and you're 20 fucking comments down in a thread arguing with somebody, you've just wasted like half an hour to 45 minutes spending time on the people that actually like your shit and talking to those guys. So I'm just like, you crack on. Like, it highlights more about their own insecurities and their own way of thinking, their own lifestyle, than it does mine. You know, they're really just exposing what I'm trying to achieve. You know, he probably needs my help more than anything. And the number of times that I've offered, saying, look, send me a number, I'll give you a call and let's have a chat and help you out. Not once has anyone ever taken us up on that.
It's really interesting that you say that, because you especially put yourself, like I said, unequivocally on your on your Insta, so any critiques could be taken as really personal. It's not even a business like facade. This is a product we're selling, but it's you, isn't it? So that must have taken some time to develop that.
Yeah, I would say
that question.
I would definitely say it took a couple of years. Definitely took a, you know, when I met my coach and one of my good friends now, and we started putting myself out there a little bit more in 2018. That's when it all started. And I was like, that's when I was like dagger in the mouth, crawling around outside his house, ready to fucking find him. And of course you'd never go through that, but it's just, you get so cross because you're like, it is like someone like degrading you or degrading what you think or what you do. And it's highlighting. And it's funny now, like I just pity the guys like now. I just literally feel nothing. And I think I've got, I follow a couple of other people on social media, and I think about the way that they talk about their haters. And I'm like, well, it fucking happens to everybody. Do you know what I mean? You don't even have to be on social media. You can be like the staff room. Not everyone likes each other in the staff room. It happens like in that incidences. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, that's.
I've got a theory on that, mate, because my social media is like poor, and I sort of post some stuff and I get like a little bit active on it, and then I don't post something for like weeks. Right. Part of it, what I'm listening here is that certainly from being in the Corps, in the Marines, you have an identity. It's a professional elite identity that you take pride in. And we're also really quite reserved in the way that we do our business. We're not very flamboyant. We, you know, and if you do when you're serving, you get sort of get back in your box, even though that it's like, it might be a really good thing, isn't it? And like, it's a bit odd that we do that. But then when you start with social media, I feel sometimes a little bit awkward about maybe recording a video because it's me.
Yeah.
And it's like that then cuts through like the identity piece, where no one cares whether you're in the Marines or not. It's you.
Yeah.
Whereas you can almost be protected by that, by a brand, by something else, and just sort of like, and be used to moving in the background and sort of resharing something else that someone's done and all the rest of it. And I remember when I first started doing these podcasts, I genuinely shit you not that the anxiety that I was feeling before I released the first one was like
sweating.
Because like I, the same as you, I was like, I got some help from people, and the first one I did was like, everyone was texting me going, that was amazing. I was thinking, completely winged it. I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to be like, you know, in my mind, right, how does Joe Rogan do it? That's great, but I'm not Joe Rogan and I haven't got that money to set that up either.
It's the overthinking process, right?
Oh, mate, the anxiety I was feeling, and I released it, and now I don't care.
So when you roll in jiu-jitsu, do you still get that, like, are you still on the fucking toilet 20 times before you do your first match?
Nah, so training wise, no. Training wise, like I'm not small. Like I'm like 17 stone, 6'5" sort of thing, probably 6'6", questionable. But even in sparring, I'll be looking, I'll be thinking, oh God, he's turned up now.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, but crack on and we'll spar, no problem. Yeah. But he's probably thinking the same thing, right? But competition, I was absolutely bricked.
That's what I mean.
The first one I was, but I'm all right now because it's.
So I got my first tournament, I got a silver, and I lost the match before we even started. And I looked at him, skinhead, Polish, and I went, he's going to fucking hell, look at him. And my coach went, are you fucking serious? You've lost the match already. And I went into it with that mentality that he was better than me before we even did it. And then the year after, I remember rolling with him again, and I tapped him out in the first minute. And I was like, because that first one's out of the way. And it's like, I was the same as you, my first podcast. Oh my God, what am I going to say? Like my first video, me. And what you think everyone else is thinking is like, fucking, my God, doom and gloom. Like actually just no one probably gives a fuck or probably won't even think about it. Do you know?
It is crazy. And it's also comforting that everyone else does the same as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, and everyone feels the same as well before you get, your capacity increases and you get used to it.
Overthink hugely. So when I was in a staff room, I used to always overthink in there, like always. And it would make me really anxious about going in a staff room. Like at times I would walk in and just, you feel like you think like everyone hates you, or like you just don't belong in there, or you're just not good enough, or you.
So I again, like I've looked at that, mate, and to support that, it's like the PT staff room in the Royal Marines is an amazing place to be, isn't it? Like it is.
Amazing.
It's full of predominantly alpha males that are physically able, that are in like
switched on,
amazing, very very intelligent, amazing at delivering physical training, all that sort of stuff. But the concept that they would, that has been sort of brought in, is that in the pursuit for excellence, errors are not tolerated at
100%.
All. So you can deliver an incredible PT instructional session and get one word of command wrong and you'll be punished for it. But yet the 99.9% of the period was incredible. It could be the best ever. Yeah. and they'd punish you for that small mistake, which makes you, it actually hinders progression.
Because you're too nervous.
It hinders
treading on an eggshells, aren't you?
It hinders progression. Yeah. So the standard that they've achieved is really good. How good could they be if that culture was just tweaked slightly to go, don't worry about the errors too much. That was a really good effort. That was really good. And, you know, there's a fine line in between allowing mistake and error and that being okay to some extent and obviously achieving high results. So, but yeah, the whole concept is like, well, I'm just, and that, so when you walk in the staff room, you're thinking, right, am I dressed correctly? And yeah, it does make you on, it does keep you on your toes, but it's almost too much.
It could be questioned. And one of the things that I think a lot of my lads struggle, which I haven't mentioned, is a perfect mentality. So it's like, at the time, are they trying to create the perfect mentality? And the standard is high, don't get me wrong. Yes. But does it create such a perfect mentality that it creates the errors like what you've pointed out quite rightly there? And I think at times, you know, I was too afraid to even say the wrong thing, so I just won't say anything. So I'll just be quiet. Like, I'll shut up in a corner, just do my job.
Which suppresses your personality. 100%.
And that's how I often felt, like, you know. And I remember, I say that, but being in the staff room was still one of the best experiences ever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want it to come across as though, like, that time when I finished my juniors and then I remember going off to Bavaria because I was going to be an AT instructor. So I'd done my skiing bit, come back and I did a year and a half in the staff room. And still to this day, that chapter has to be one of the best chapters of my life. You know, sometimes when I'm sitting there in the morning, I reckon at least, so I do that routine five mornings. I reckon at least three or four times a week, I will always think about my time in the staff room, always, because it makes me happy. It's like, and I always imagine that whenever we pass and we go on, whatever it is that is next, you accumulate like a highlight reel of your life and all the best periods of your time. You just relive them. And that will always be one of the best times because the lads were just incredible. I mean, we were on a staff together and all the lads there, and you had all the crap going on. And it was just
the banter
going on, you know, and, you know, I still, to this day, which I love, can't ever get away from my fuck-ups from 2004. Like, it's like nearly 20 years and I'm still getting shit for the same stuff. But I miss that. And that's what I miss. That's what I cherish about the core. You coming on talking about banks and I'm like, fuck, I've missed that banner. I've missed getting that shit. And I think when you do leave the military, I know we've already talked about that, but talking about it with you now, you miss that, like, you know, that open banter, you know, not a lot of people get it.
Yeah, man. What's next for you, Jay?
It's a good question. And I'll happily put my hands up right now and say I'm in a place where I need to reinforce my future. So, you know, I've written two great books. I'm really happy with that. That's a real achievement. I think what I need to do is get around the UK a bit more and do a few more workshops, do some more seminars. Get myself out there a little bit more, for sure. Again, like what we've spoken about, it's the fine balance between not wanting to be away from home and being away too much. We have on the cards to travel the world when my boy finishes college, which is in about 3 years. So the way that we want to do that is we want to travel for 12 weeks, come back for Christmas, travel for 12 weeks, come back for Easter, travel for 12 weeks, get the boy into uni or job or whatever he wants to do. So I think travel, workshops, keep doing the same. I think consistency is key in this game. You know, what I see a lot of business owners is like up and down. And I think you just, every single day, 1% a day, is just showing up, improving. The staff room mentality. It's like, how can I keep improving? How can I keep evolving? And I think that's key. I created a 10-year vision about where I wanted to be at 50 when I was 40, like something we do with a lot of the guys. And I'm working towards them, you know. They're the things that I'm working towards. You know, I said I wanted to write 4 books by the time I was 50. I'm taking a bit of a break out from it because I'm fucking written out. So maybe a couple more books to go. The traveling, the business goals, who knows? Like, you know, who knows? But I think I think I've just got to sit down and work out exactly what that's going to be. You know, we've just moved into this house. I say just, but it's been a lot of disruption. Like, we've been here a year. Darcy's 10 months. We get married in 5 weeks. Like, it fucking, you know, 43 energy wise. It's like, you know, what we're going to do here. So I think the answer to your question is a lot more of what we're doing, getting out there, meeting people face to face. You know, like, I think there's nothing more powerful being in a room with a bunch of guys that really want to learn, you know, and I miss that. We're an online business and doing stuff online is brilliant, but being face to face, that's where the magic happens. People go away and go, fuck, I won't forget that session. And I think that's the future.
Jamie, it's been a great catch up, mate. And it's been really good to hear, you know, your story since leaving the Marines, because we haven't really spoken too much since then. So, mate, it's been really good, and I wish you all the best for the future. You're doing some great things, and I'll keep up to date with the Insta, but yeah. I'll definitely head down for a wet
100%, mate. Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me on. It's definitely brought back a lot of memories in terms of just catching up with, you know, one of the things I regret most is not keeping in touch with a lot of the lads, and it's my fault completely. You know, like, I think there's an element of overthinking. You always think, oh, I lost touch with all the lads. So I left the staff room at the end of 2009 and did a couple of other drafts after. So I was away from the staff room. So I think if I had been in a staff room, I probably would have had more but it is what it is. And I think, having talked to you, I think I'm going to reach out to some of the lads, I think, this week and catch up with them.
Legends. Jay, thanks a lot, mate.
Mate, thank you.